Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Lisa from Blackpink. She should be gay. I don't care what y'all say.
I mean, she is.
I mean, it's all but confirmed at this point. I mean, literally everyone in Blackpink is questionable. I'm looking at you sideways. But yeah, she should be gay in real life, you know, not just for fan service when they're performing, but you know, whatever. I think she is privately in her life as well. But anyways, yeah, shout out Lisa from Blackpink.
I gotta check out that new Netflix doc, because apparently,
yes, representation. You do. Yes, representation does matter, dude. It's so good. I mean, it's not that good, but anyways.
What up, Cabrona?
What's poppin', Chingona? Was good. We're back. It's Halloween.
Yeah, it is. Oh my god. Hey, wait, like, I guess when this comes out, it'll only be like 2 days away.
Yeah, so. Happy Halloween, motherfuckers. What's good?
Time flies.
It's a whole ass scary doomsday situation outside. So, I mean, it is Halloween all the time right now. And until maybe, who knows?
Yeah, god, in one week from today when we're recording, it's gonna be an anxiety filled night. It's gonna be that episode from the first episode of that one season of American Horror Story, Cult, I think it's called.
Oh yeah,
everybody loses their shit on election night.
All the white people lose their shit. Yeah, I remember that. And for us, it's gonna be like, oh wow, business as usual. Like,
it's going to be the SNL skit with Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, where he's like, are y'all just realizing this? Okay, I guess. Good for y'all. Like, it's never been our country, but good for you. But so, I mean, I've already voted. Have you already voted?
I have my ballot, and I just have to drop it off at the box. Ugh.
Good.
Love me that California life. Just in the box.
I think you can do that here too. I don't know. I went in person because it was no line in Oak Cliff, of course. And
oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Oh, I got my friend Abel, shout out if you're listening, to vote, and he said the same shit. He's like, I walked in, it was like nothing. Nobody was there. I was like, for fuck's sake, guys. I'm like, at least your vote counts a whole lot, I guess.
It does. Like, I vote in every local election in Oak Cliff, and there's only like 50. I'm always number 51 or number 52 of everyone who votes in Oak Cliff, like South Oak Cliff.
That's wild. I mean,
my brother is like, he's either 50 or 51, and I'm 52 or 51. It's always like that. Like, and that's with my parents voting. So, can you imagine?
Wow, that's intense. But hopefully, you know, a lot of local stuff at the very least turns out well, you know?
Yeah, I there was something on the ballot to increase the pay for teachers, and so I'm always going to say yes to that. So, and my friend told me that that would directly impact her. So if it passes, she'll get a $10,000 raise. So I'm hoping that goes through so I can get my homegirl a raise.
Dang, do I want to be a teacher? No, I'm just kidding.
In Texas. Yeah, no other state. I don't think California is.
I have made the joke that if Texas goes blue, I'm just going to move back, you know, might as well.
I mean, honestly, Texas is blue. It's just people don't vote. And voter suppression is like legal here. Wild, so
there, yeah. One ballot box per county or something?
Yeah, I think there's only one in like Richardson, I think, total. One place where you can vote.
There's
that's
like
it.
Three within 3 miles here from where I am.
What the fuck? I could walk. And of course, dude, you know what the excuse is? They're saying it's because of COVID, but they can't close the government buildings or close schools. But they can definitely limit the vote because they're not closing any government shit. They're leaving, making people go to
ballot
work.
Ballot boxes are the literal opposite of a problem like for COVID. It's like a fix for that problem.
It's until people stupid. Set fire to those ballot boxes.
God, yeah. Shout out to Los Angeles.
It never ends out here. It's like a continuous, like, I'm telling you, it's Halloween every day out here. It's a horror story, American Horror Story. You should quit, give up. You can never write anything as crazy as this year or some weeks of quarantine that were absolutely insane. You can't beat
that. The purge is starting to be like less of a dystopia we talked about and this. More of a reality.
Me and you talked about this on this podcast, and we said The Purge is not something that is like...
It's not as outlandish as people think.
I feel like it's not even a fable. It's just like, yo, this is going to happen if y'all keep fucking around. And at this point...
Yeah. Damn, I did not expect this much election talk out of our banter, but here we are.
Anyways, so what have you been doing to avoid thinking about all of Halloween? Well, not spoopy season, but just the world on fire.
Well, because I love, you know, I love horror. So our annual Halloween episodes are such a joy for me. But before for some reason, I don't know, the last 2 weeks, I haven't really watched TV or films. I've just kind of been like reading and listening to podcasts, which I'll talk about in a second. But before that, I did watch this like anthology type of series on Hulu called Monsterland, which was pretty interesting.
Ooh, okay.
There was queer people, people of color, you know, like a decent amount of representation, and Caitlin Dever from Booksmart, which is always a treat.
Oh, I love her.
But I like that it was very much like about humanity and how we make mistakes and stuff, and actually kind of fits in a little bit with what I'm going to be talking about today with our shows.
It really will. A lot of therapy is what. A lot of hard lessons. I mean, I didn't think I would get that from these shows, but you know, yeah. Here we are. Look at me.
But and then I also, yeah, since I stopped doing that, I read a bunch of books, including The Grief Keeper, which has been on my list for a while. Which is, it's queer, it's about a girl who, you know, comes from Central America to claim asylum in the U.S. and then is kind of, like, exploited by Americans, which, of course...
As per usual. Yes, yeah. That is how that actually happens.
But it ends up being kind of, like, a bit of a love story and interesting, so I recommend it. It was really, really good.
Okay, all right. Grief, what is it called again?
The Grief Keeper. It's written by a Latinx person. I can't remember exactly who.
Oh, that's fucking great. I have been really sad lately. Things have been happening in my life. So I have turned to the complete opposite of the way I feel on the inside. And I've just been listening to K-pop nonstop because it's so happy.
K-pop.
Dude, so I'm here. Like, I saw the... I was... already listening to Blackpink before for some reason. I think Rina Sawayama, she's a Japanese like artist who's like breaking into pop. She's changing it in a whole new way. I really like what she's doing with pop music, and I don't like pop music anymore. Well, I didn't, and then I started listening to Rina, and then I started listening to Blackpink, and from there it became like this K-pop hole that I just like fell into, and I'm like, wow, it's really like nice in here if I don't look at like the people with you know eating disorders or you know the crazy beauty standards in Korean like pop culture, right? So I'm ignoring all of that and just listening to the music, right? And I'm enjoying the fan service of all the queers they're putting in there, of all the people that I don't know. I think all of them are gay. Honestly, I'm never going to be that. I don't know. I'm not a straight girl. I don't know what straight girls are doing these days, but there's no heterosexual explanation. There's none, dude. Like, and I've been, I've been enjoying California Love 84 because of that. Now I've been going binging. Shout out to California Love 84. She's like, I don't know, my interests have, you know, they've always been, we've always had the same interests, and now I've just grown with her interests. Now I'm also into K-pop, and I don't know, I Stan Luna, whatever that means, I know what it means now, and there's 11 members.
I love K-pop culture from an outsider's perspective, because I'm not in it, but I love that they'll spam, like, white supremacist like trends on Twitter to drown them out.
They're heroes.
On TikTok, they'll like do some really cool stuff, and then you'll see like, you know, some like activists from YouTube and stuff, like Elijah Daniels, like talking about going on news channels and talking about Stan Luna.
Yes, I didn't know what that meant, like back when everything was happening, and now I'm like, yeah, I get it. Yes,
it's
11
just like
members.
A new form of trolling. You know, it's cute. Cute way to do it.
It's the most adorable Gen Z thing that I've ever seen in my life, and it's so like wholesome and harmless, and if you're gonna like spam someone with Stan Luna, you're eventually gonna check out who Luna is, and then you're gonna be like, wow, they're amazing, and I can't stop listening. So I stan Luna, I stan Blackpink, I stan Twice. Oh, I love Mamamoo. The way that I love Hwasa is like, wow, she's wow, like I'm speechless. And I think I'm in love. I would iron her clothes. I'd wash her clothes. Whatever she wants me to do, I would do it for Hwasa because she's beautiful. Mwah. Shout out Hwasa from Mamamoo. If y'all don't know what I'm talking about, go watch YouTube.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Go watch California Love 84. She will explain to you, and she's going to freak out more than me, and it's going to be beautiful. And honestly, it's made me so happy this last month. I've just been so not happy. So listening to them and getting to like be in that world, at least in my mind when I'm driving, or in just in my mind for a little bit, is great, and it's helped, and I'm very much like less sad because of it. So I know that wasn't grammatically correct. I don't care, whatever. I'm happier because of it. So y'all go, if whatever makes you happy,
do
right?
What you and gotta do, you know, K-pop. What I mean, if you have to like listen to a true crime series for 30 hours in
30
a week,
hours
I mean, then that's what you gotta do.
What true crime podcast have you listened to? Do you want to shout them out?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I've been listening to Up and Vanished. They're like the case that they worked on. They work on like different cases per season, but that first case is still ongoing, really. Like, people are still going to trial and all this other stuff. So like that. I like ongoing shit like that. True crime is like my secret vice or whatever.
They said that like most people like true crime stuff because they like can mentally prepare themselves in case they ever get into that situation. Do you feel like you're mentally preparing to get kidnapped?
I think I don't know. That'd be really weird to dive into why I like true crime so much.
A lot of people say that's why.
I only like the ones that are kind of like mysteries. Maybe that's what I like. It's like, oh, I don't know, maybe I have like a fucking hero complex and I want to go save people. I don't know.
You want to be the one that solves the mystery.
Yeah, I want to be like, oh, I know who did it, you know.
Sherlock Holmes over here. Okay, I mean, that makes sense. Like, you liked procedurals and Law and Order and stuff, so this is like real life Law and Order. So
yeah,
that makes
not
sense.
Anymore I'm not watching them anymore, you know. ACAB,
I mean, no ACAB, right? ACAB forever.
Oh, Olivia Benson.
I know.
I still have that TikTok in my head. Nope. Where they're when ACAB was out, and then they're like Olivia Benson. They're like, I hope you know that this has nothing to do with you. That's so stupid.
I love the Gen Z generation. They're really out here doing some funny stuff. They're funny and they're creative. And
I think
TikTok.
We can credit that one to millennials.
The what now?
I think we can credit that TikTok to millennials in particular. But yeah, Gen Z's are out here doing it.
That's true. It's both of it's like the, I don't know. I feel like the kids keep me young because of that. So I guess, yeah, millennials are still kind of young in their hearts.
we're trying.
We've kept up with things. I don't think like we've really like lost our touch yet. I don't feel out of touch completely. Like, I like K-pop now, and I'm almost 30, so this is where I am in life, so whatever. Anyways.
Like, when we're not suffering through a two-day hangover from having two beers, then, you know.
Two beers. That's me.
No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, it's been an interesting time. Back to your regularly scheduled programming.
And we're back.
today's episode is sponsored by our Teespring. Go buy a sweater now that it's getting nice and cozy, because like those sweaters are mad cute. I'm glad I can pull mine out again. I haven't worn a sweater in months.
It is super cold here, and I wore my sweater yesterday for no reason. So you guys, our sweaters are super comfy. They're super warm. They feel good in 50 degree weather. I know, I'm your test subject. I wore it in 50 degree weather. Perfect. Fine. It was nice and cozy. So
check out the link in our bio.
Oh man, right, I'm mentally drained today too.
You
are? Let's do it. I'm mentally drained today too, because I actually like, that's why I'm like, oh man, let's do it. Like, I'm awake, sorta.
All right. So with that energy,
yeah.
Should we go in chronological order?
Yeah, let's do chronological order.
All right, sweet. Then I'll get us started with our first topic, and you're going to probably be able to guess what our second topic is. But I'm going to talk about The Haunting of Hill House. Ooh. Which was, it just came out, last year? Maybe two years ago? It was created by Mike Flanagan, who is also responsible for some excellent horror films like Hush and Oculus. To me, the way I read his voice when it comes to horror, it's unique in that he tries to make the unknown really known. Right? He likes to expose it and tear it apart. Whether that means breaking down the ghost to a science or really intricately explaining their origins by jumping around in space and time, he just breaks it down. So he's really interesting, for a white dude.
you gotta throw that in there. They need to know.
They have to. The Haunting of Hill House kind of seems to be the first of a series of single season horror shows on Netflix. And in true, auteur fashion, he's bringing back actors and themes for the follow-ups. I'm sure you'll discuss that in the next topic. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like American Horror in that way, except he actually knows how to finish a season properly. Yep. He understands what it's like how to end it and how to start it and how to jump around.
He knows how to write.
Yes. Damn. But anyways, another thing that these shows that he's now creating have in common, other than the names and being based on a single setting sort of, is the exploration of people's traumas and how their past kind of catch up with them in the future. So I'm going to talk about that a little bit. So Haunting of Hill House is about a family of seven who moves into a haunted house. With the intent to fix it up and then flip the house and then go and make their dream house. And honestly, there's so many damn characters that it took me forever to figure out who was who. I tried to watch the show so many times before I forced myself to watch it. Because I was just like, who's who? And the oldest brother looks like he should be the youngest, in the future. Which doesn't look old at all. But eventually I figured it out and it was worth it. So the oldest child, I should say, is Steven. He's a writer. He wrote a book about his family's time in Hill House, as well as several other hauntings. But he's mad insecure because he's never even seen a ghost, according to him. And then the second kid is Shirley, who is played by Edward Cullen's mom on Twilight.
And that's your point of reference. Good job. Mm-hmm.
She's a mom, she's a wife, she's a stressed out lady type, and she's also a mortician for reasons that are absolutely related to her trauma from Hill House. And you get this have a whole episode about that. It's actually really, really interesting the way her perspective is when it comes to what she does for a living, But it also reminds me a little bit of Mort the Mortician on Bob's Burgers.
Oh!
Just such innocence, But anyways, then there's Theo, or Theodora. She's a lesbian. I mean, a psychiatrist. That's what's important.
With her gloves. Okay. Mm-hmm.
She's also the full embodiment of a middle child. She's literally, she has two older siblings and two younger, so she's as middle as you can be. And she really captures that miserable experience and even has the appropriate emo vibes in the past and in the future. And she, as a character, is kind of what empaths think they are. Oh. she's very sensitive, right?
I can feel your feelings.
She can quite literally do that, which is why she has these little gloves. And then there's the twins, which is Luke and Nell. Luke is played by Oliver Jackson, who he's the husband from the film Invisible Man, the 2020 remake. And he was really scary in that shit. So I think they used him perfectly in the following season because he's got the perfect scary white guy vibes.
Creepy, scary white dude. Yep.
Yeah.
Correct.
But he's a good actor. Apparently, he was originally going to be a love interest for Nell's character, I'm glad they didn't go that way. Mm. I'm so glad they didn't go that way.
Oh, yeah, they didn't. Thank God.
So his story, Luke's story, is mostly about overcoming his addiction and, of course, the trauma that he went through as a kid. Because he was, you know, other than Nelly, he was the youngest. Or they both, you know, they're twins. They're the same age. Finally, Victoria Pedretti is Nell. And she's now known as the Queen of the Lesbians, but that's nothing to do with Hill House. she suffers just a ton for a number of reasons that I guess I can't really get into because spoilers. But my girl has issues. Anyways, so did you notice mm-hmm. that all of the siblings in the future, except for Steven, end up having POC love interests?
Is that why Steven sucks? No, I'm like...
But it's just like, I think that, Mike yeah. Flanagan literally wanted to take away my ability to say, damn, this shit was white. Because, like, every single one, they were just like, yep, I'm gonna go with that, you know?
Yeah, like, he kind of surprised me with that because you watched the first episode and you're like, where are the people that I actually care about? And I'm like, okay, white people suffering because of the hands of white people. Sounds right. but let's keep it real. Y'all would do this to black and brown people. But okay, go off, Mike Flanagan. Sure, if that's what you think. Because I did notice that. And I have my criticisms of this show just because, again, it goes back to, like, I feel like, it wasn't for me, you know? Like, I understood the themes. I get it. We're going through grief, denial, anger, all that shit. Great. Therapy. But then I was like, do I really care about these people? I really don't fucking care about these people. I think I only cared about Nell and, of course, the gay girl. And that was it.
Steven was the most annoying. And, like, it starts off about him, which is, I think, why it's, like, hard to get into.
I think that's for it. It's, just, it's too white male.
But, you know, a lot of the series, like... So the plot wise, it revolves around trying to uncover why and how certain characters died, one in the present and one in the past, and they sort of mirror each other. So to do that, we kind of like slowly go through everything that happened to the kids while on Hill House, and they go back and forth through time a lot. And, you know, because a lot of weird shit and ghost shit, like, it hides in plain sight. This was like, Hill House was a true horror story, right? Like, there's jump scares and all that shit. It was really great in that way. And then but then also sometimes the past memories are out of order because there's someone having a nightmare in the future. But it is interesting how, like, even though the characters, they like to act as though, like, their past is behind them, the siblings find a way to surround themselves with it. Like, Shirley literally lives in her funeral home, surrounding herself with death, right? Theo uses her sensitivity to help children who are heavily traumatized and ends up taking on that trauma herself. And then Steven literally makes a living off of writing about the ghosts of his past. And, like, so what are we saying? Like, there's maybe saying, like, if we don't purposely process our trauma, we're going to subconsciously do it in other ways, and they're probably going to make us really miserable because all these siblings are miserable, you know, for a good reason. So, I don't know, when I was thinking about that, I thought about how horror throughout history has kind of reflected society's anxieties and what Hill House might be reflecting. So, like, right now, in general, in the last few years, maybe the past decade, we've been in a time where therapy and mental health are talked about more than ever. Like, history, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. it's a big part of, like, what we see on social media and what people are always talking about. And so my thoughts maybe are a little premature, but I'm thinking that maybe this show was sort of born out of the fear that we can't deal, that maybe we won't be able to deal with our traumas properly because it's kind of a privilege to have access to therapy and because our trauma can, in general, just be really difficult to face. So I think maybe that's what it is. It's just, like, this consciousness that society has right now about mental health and trauma and stuff like that. Whereas before, we would just, like, you know, shut up and move on. And so now it's like you're facing it. You're facing your ghosts. And that's what they're doing throughout this whole series. And sometimes the ghost is you.
Okay. Sometimes the ghost is you. Write that down. Put that in your movie, girl. Okay. I mean, there was a lot of like memorable quotes. Of course, none that I can remember, but lots about, you know, what ghosts are manifestations of. And this show is definitely telling you, yeah, like you're the ghost and you're your own worst thing until you figure your shit out. And I think that's like an interesting way to see horror, because before you would tell me what it was about, I didn't really want to fuck with it. And I'm talking about horror in general, right? Like you kind of broke it down through these years, like, oh, okay, no, it's just a manifestation of our anxieties and fears. And I'm more into like monsters versus, you know, ghosts, because low-key kind of believe in them a little bit, you know. I don't fuck with spirits, and so that's why I try to stay away from stuff like this, because I'm just like, I don't fuck with spirits, I don't fuck with ladies in the lake, I don't fuck with none of that. Y'all stay over there, I'm gonna mind my business, I'm not unlocking no portals, I ain't doing nothing.
A true child of immigrants that's afraid of La Llorona y el cucuy.
Right? Like, I didn't grow up scared of those things, but I think, like, my mom never, she kind of just hinted at those things. Like, we didn't actively have those stories in my family, but like in my extended family, it was always something spoken about, and I was always like, wait, what do you mean they exist? What do you mean they're real? Like, wait, hold up, nah. Yeah, so I watching Hill House, I mean, haunted houses, that's like a big one for me. And these annoying fucking characters that are not dealing with their shit, obviously, and they're living in their trauma. And I'm just like, okay, this whole thing is just like therapy. Like, each of them is actually facing the thing. And I guess that's what all horror is. Well, not all horror, good horror, is, to me, that I like, is like when people actually deal with their shit and face their fears instead of just getting like hacked away in interesting ways. Where the people actually have to deal with like their bullshit. And I don't know. Hill House still didn't do it for me. Like, I got bored, like, halfway through. Other than the Get Girls episodes, I really... It's just white people. I was just like, oh, man, like, these white people are really, like... He has an addiction. And I'm just like, I get it. He's the most, like, he's seen some really messed up, traumatic things that he's not been able to deal with. And so he's resorted to, like, you know, it's just, all of this felt a little bit too real, a little bit too close, a little less horror, a little more just like drama, you know, so with some spooky elements.
That's like
involved,
a new thing, like with Monsterland, that Hulu mm-hmm. show, even though, like, yeah, it's literally called Monsterland, so you expect mm-hmm. it to be a little bit more that, but the whole thing is like the demon is just like your feelings, you know what I mean? Like, this new wave of horror, I think that's where we're going, you know. I think we're finally getting past our fucking phase of what
violence.
Is it called, the one with like The Conjuring and Sinister and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I think we got past that, and then we dove into like Hereditary, Midsommar like territory, where it's just like
feelings.
Drama.
Your feelings. Yeah. Your fucking your fear
anxiety
of your anxiety. Yeah, like I think that's a more interesting, yeah, like Hereditary was pretty interesting in that way. I can't say the same for Midsommar, other than don't follow white people out into the woods. Don't ever do that in your life if you ain't got cell phone reception. Don't do it,
please. If you're not completely white, you're gonna die. Don't do that's, it.
And then, like, I think what horror is doing, good horror to me, is more along the lines of like Lovecraft Country or Us, you know. I feel like, to me, I'm moving more in that direction versus white guys selling stories, more towards like,
so, well,
black,
I mean, that
people.
Makes sense for you, because
yeah.
you like political drama, you like The Purge, you know what I mean? You like,
yeah, Purge was great.
Yeah, like, you're a political science major, dude. I mean, that's gonna be up your alley. And I think yeah. those aren't gonna be completely gone away, because we had a quick phase of that, but we're not done with it.
I think it's just beginning, because I think black creators are like going, yeah, no, the problem is y'all, like white people, y'all the demons. We ain't even got to go that far.
Capitalism. It's this, you know what I mean?
It's not even fiction. It's like real life. Y'all are the demons, and we're going to tell you about it. And it's like a re-education of another generation that needs to know it. So to me, I'm more leaning in that direction versus well, I think white people are like, wow, it's our fault. Let's tackle that conversation, right? Like, and that's what white people are doing now in horror. They're going, maybe I'm the one that's fucked up and causing the violence. Let's talk about it, right? And then they write a show about it, right? Or they take from an old ghost story and they go, oh, you know what? This explores my theme the way I feel we're the demons now. And so I think there's a very different movement going on depending on, like, where you are, right? Like, black creatives are going, no, white people have been the problem. White creators are going, we're the problem. So that's my own idea on how
it's
that's
hard for me to see. I haven't finished Lovecraft, but it's hard for me to see it as a horror show as much as I see it as like a magical realism show.
It's there's no one genre for that show. It's body horror, sci-fi, Indiana Jones.
Yeah, sci-fi. Like, that's what I get from him, the vibes. I don't put it within the realm of horror.
Like, I would just because, like, as fantastical.
Maybe I need to watch it more. I don't know.
Yeah, as fantastical as it may seem, a lot of those things are real life. So to me, I'm like, no, that's horror because it happened in real life. You know, they were really doing this to black people and to anyone that wasn't white. Like, they're real life hunting and killing black people. So to me, that's horror. So that's why I'm like, nah, I'm definitely going to leave it in the horror category, in American history category. But to me, that's why I'm like, nah, like, the real horror is the violence that, you know, racism causes, right? And I think Lovecraft maybe was pulling from, like, about 50 billion things, but those that seemed to be the running theme. But we really started talking about Lovecraft instead of
white
boys.
Yeah, this isn't a Lovecraft episode. Let's go on to your topic.
Yeah, okay, so I am covering The Haunting of Bly Manor, and it's... I like this so much more than Haunting of Hill House, of course, because lesbians. And that's why we're here talking about it. It takes place at Bly Manor. You get Miss Victoria Pedretti, who was used again. She's in season one. She's Nell. She comes back as the actual lead in Bly Manor. She plays a au pair, a.k.a. babysitter, live-in babysitter. White people like to call themselves fancy names. She's a live-in babysitter teacher, and she's taking care of these two children, Miles and Flora, who have just recently lost their parents in a fatal accident in India. She doesn't know that, right? She gets hired by their uncle to go work on this mansion out in the country in the UK, and... oddly enough, the uncle never likes to visit. I wonder why. She is accompanied in this house by two adults, Miss Hannah Gross. Oh my god, the way I love Miss Hannah Gross. One moment, let me find her real name. One second. Tania Miller. She also played a stud in a movie called Stud's Life. I love a queer woman. She also was in Years and Years on HBO.
Yes, that's what I was gonna say. Love her.
I love her. I think she's actually a lesbian. I don't know. Maybe.
I think there's a number of queer people in season two.
Yes.
Like, and real life queer actors, I should say.
Ms. Jessel, right?
I'm
just throwing that one out there.
Are you talking about Petunia from Harry Potter? Yes.
Petunia from Harry Potter?
Oh, no. Never mind.
Different one.
But I think she is.
Yeah, I think she is too. She plays Miss Jessel. She plays Peter's love interest. Peter also works for the uncle who owns the mansion. Peter sucks, and we'll get into that. Maybe we won't. I don't know. I don't know how much I want to mention a white man. but Victoria Pedretti plays this au pair who falls in love with... do I want to ruin that? Yes, I do. You're watching
it
for
this
reason. You
do, but give it a second. Like,
she falls in love with someone, y'all. Okay? And it's gay. Anyways, continue.
That was the whole spoiler. Okay.
Right, yeah. That's as much as I'm going to spoil. She falls in love with someone, and it's great. Anyways, and then there's also the chef named Owen. We love Owen. His name's Raul Coley. I apologize if I said your name wrong. A very handsome man. I shout out to this casting. Like, he really turned it around.
Absolutely. They definitely said, like, okay, so maybe we shouldn't make all the people of color side characters.
That part.
Yeah. They tried a little harder.
They did. This was actually, like, a really mixed bag of... a more realistic look of what the UK looks like, right? We get someone who's like a Southeast Asian. We get two black women, a lot of white dudes. We'll shout out to Oliver Jackson Cohen, who comes back to play Peter, and Amelia Eve, who plays Jamie, the groundskeeper, the really the hot little cute little groundskeeper in her little overalls. She's adorable and spicy. Has, like,
Lena Headey and Imagine Me and You vibes.
You know? Yes, exactly. Loves
the flowers, loves the baggy clothes, unexpectedly falls in love.
This was like a 1980s Imagine You and Me, right? Like, low key, yeah. But like better. I think it was better than Imagine. Well, it's a different story.
It's a different story.
Yeah. It's based on several novels by Mr. Henry James. The main thing that it's based off of is The Turn of the Screw. But a couple of the stories within this story are other Henry James stories. So there's one called Sir Edmund Orme that's by Henry James. That's a Victoria Pedretti's story. That's Danny's story about being haunted by her past and her guilt. And then there's episode, I believe, 8 that was also named after what this book was called. It's The Romance of Certain Old Clothes, and it's episode 8, and it kind of goes back into the history of Bly Manor, why it is the way it is, the history of the
standalone episode. That's what you're talking about?
Yes, the standalone episode.
God, it's so old-timey, so, like, I don't know, just it seems like a completely different show in that episode, but I kind of was into it. Like I said, this, like, Mike Flanagan likes to break it down to the root, and that's what that episode is, you know?
He broke down everyone to the root, just about. But I want to kind of deep dive into how he treated women of color in this series. And the way he treats women in general is a pattern I've seen, but especially women of color in this series, Bly Manor. The way that black women were treated, it felt realistic, but also, I don't know. You know, it's a story about ghosts, but you still did that to black women, right? So that's where I'm like, ah, dude.
I kind of see where you're going. So, like, all the women were really centered. So they're, and it's a horror show, so they're all going to be really suffering, you know, but I see what you're saying. Yeah, like, it is a lot of women suffering a whole lot, except for a couple of really nice episodes
at the very end
towards the end
that don't give the women of color that same kind of grace, like,
right, exactly.
And I think it's just something that should be brought up, because as we're undoing, you know, the way we see things, right, the way I see things now, I'm just, I don't know. Hannah's character to me seemed to be one of the most interesting characters. And honestly, she's beautiful and I'm kind of in love with her. Maybe that's what it is. And I'm like, how did you do that to my character that I love the most? I loved her more than I did Danny, because Danny was cute and I loved the story, but I didn't like her character the most. I loved Hannah Gross's character. And even though she played a straight woman, I didn't give a fuck, because when you get to see, like, this is the way I see straight couples in anything. If they are not white, I ship them. I'm like, wow, they're not white people? I want them to end up together. So, because it's also not something we're used to seeing. So, I just didn't want to see that kind of suffering of black women or suffering of women in general. But I'll take it, because they had very beautiful stories, very complicated stories to tell that were true and honest to those characters, and I think they're very well written. But that is just an FYI, if you don't want to see black suffering, don't watch this, because it's not really, you're not really going to get the kind of deep dive that you think they deserve. And honestly, I'm always like a person that's going to root for like the B characters versus the people that I think we're supposed to be talking about. I'm never really interested in white leads, so that's why I kind of felt a way about Hannah, and I felt a way about how they did Rebecca, Miss Jessel, that they had to deal with a lot of pain and even in their personal relationships, in the story, they dealt with like unnecessary pain. And it's not like I always want to see happy stories, but, and especially in a horror, but it ended up being a love story anyways, so why make them suffer? Anyways, back to the love story. There is a very beautiful love story in this horror. There's multiple love stories happening at the same time. And the most important one to me, other than Miss Hannah Gross and Owen, it would be Danny and Jamie. Now, if you don't want to get spoilers, you want to skip this part, go ahead, skip through the end, because I want to kind of talk about them and what I think they actually represented and what I think those last couple episodes meant. Because, I don't know, I really like their story because I really felt like in the end they were more talking about that sadness you feel when you finally fall in love, but you feel like that love. It's a bit
about depression, right?
Yeah, like, well, not just depression, but like the real life anxiety of like, if you fall in love with someone and you want to be with them forever, one of you is going to die eventually, right? So, and they talk about it in the last episode or last two episodes where Flora's character is like, well, I'm going to lose him eventually. And, you know, Jamie is just going like, hey, it's going to happen either way. You just have to live every day like it's the last. And I felt like it was like, I don't know, like a way of dealing with grief and loss. And I feel like that's what the entire series, this series was about dealing with the potential loss of someone that you love forever. And that's what it is. That's a love story. He said love stories were also ghost stories, that they were the same thing, yeah. Because all ghosts were people that you loved at some point. So I feel like he really broke down ghost stories to me, and it really felt like a deeper conversation about loss and grief and what do you do? How do you continue on when you lost someone? And I thought that was very beautiful, and especially to tell it through the lens of queer women was very cool. And it felt real. It felt like maybe even, you know, Danny's internal ghost, the beast, whatever, was more like, it could also be like maybe a conversation about like disease. Like, okay, I'm going to get sick. I know I'm sick. It's going to happen, you know? And I felt like it was maybe a conversation about, it could be about disease, you know? Like, oh, I only have this much time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It could be about, you know, like, God, what are some of the ones where, like, you when you get older, they get worse?
Like Alzheimer's dementia, or dementia.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yes. That's something that people definitely have to deal with.
Yeah. And so it felt like a very, like, especially what I was going through in my own personal life, it really hit. You know, I was like, oh, shit, I'm going to, like, that last episode, you're definitely going to, like, have a couple thug tears. Because I know I didn't.
I was crying like a bitch, bro.
You crying like a bitch?
Yeah.
Wow. No. I let out 5, for sure, at most, you know? It's because I was at work, so I was like, I can't be crying at work. But it's a very heavy, heavy thing to watch and to see that loss. And I think, you know, it was one of the better love stories I've seen. This just would have been like a Black Mirror episode. Honestly, it could have been a Black Mirror episode to me. It could have been like a 2-hour long movie of a Black Mirror episode. But since he likes a deep dive all the way back to the 18 whatevers, and he wants to tell you about somebody's cousin, husband, and they sister, and they kid, and generations worth of trauma, then this is the actual conversation of breaking generational trauma. And that's what Danny's character does. She breaks the generational trauma within that entire house, and she breaks it for everyone. And that's really beautiful too, like the idea of, I'm gonna stop it here. And that's like that's so therapy. That's like, he's gone.
It honored her in a way that, like you kind of mentioned, other characters didn't get honored.
Mm-hmm. That were just hurt. And they didn't necessarily get to break their trauma until a white girl did it for them. So, but Hannah Gross did it for herself, at least. Miss Hannah was all the way there for her man at the very end. And I really just didn't like the way they did that. There's a lot of obvious things going on with Peter and Miles that I saw pretty early on. I was like, I'm not hallucinating. That's a grown-ass man in that body. But so I kind of figured out that element pretty quick. So it kind of ruined it when it they showed it to me, and I felt like I didn't need I didn't need a whole like 9 episodes to get there, but that's not my business. It's fine.
It's because you show. you wanted just that. You know what I mean? You wanted just the love story. Yeah. It was a whole thing.
What did you think about it? I know that you're gonna feel different than me. So what did you feel about it?
Yeah, I thought it was a love story. Like overall, like when I describe Hill House, that's a horror story.
Oh yeah.
And when I see Bly Manor, like that's a love story. I thought that they were two completely different things. I guess the way that I think about it is that Hill House has better acting and was actually a horror. And yeah. I think overall, in every technical sense, it was a better season. But Bly Manor, which was a love story, really affected people, lesbians, a lot more. Like, it's something that's going to stick with you a lot longer. You know, it's something that's a lot more meaningful and it hits a lot closer. Mm-hmm. Because, like I said, it's a love story. It's aiming for your heart, whereas the other one is aiming for your fear. Like, it's... Yeah, so I thought it was excellent. If it wasn't for Bly Manor, I would have never watched Hill House, right? Because I couldn't get into Hill House as many times as I tried.
Same.
But Bly Manor, you know, reeled me in. Danny's terrible accent reeled me right in.
Yeah.
And I definitely think it could have been a little bit better. But even though it's not technically a second season, it's a whole separate series, I think of it as a sophomore season of this type of thing for Mike Flanagan. And sophomore seasons always have a sophomore slump. So, but yeah, like you said, the choice to make this like well-rounded, gorgeous love story was a brave one. So I was pretty stoked on it. You know what I mean? It's like, although when they first struck up their little relationship, I was a little confused. I was like, that's out of nowhere. But at the same time, thinking about it, like the first time that they interact, Danny is like, you know, the gardener just walked in as if like we'd known each other forever, you know, like it was a little bit, yeah. they knew their audience, so I was pretty happy with it, you know, in general, even though it had some technical flaws.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't perfect, but it's like, I don't know, Spoopy Seasons San Junipero a little. You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like a big old San Junipero thing. It was very sad.
Yeah, it was very fucking sad. But I think it's a good preparation for people who are living. You know, it's just what you gotta do. And it's what you gotta do. I'm gonna cry. It's fine. Yeah. Excuse me. All right, I'm feeling emotional. It's fine. No, it was really good.
Ratings-wise, what do you give them?
You know, I got a discount for what they did to the black women on this show and what they did to women in general, and how it was basically white savory. Even though she was a lesbian, I don't know, she's not a minority to me. She's a skinny little blonde girl who's 5'3" and fine. So, and she's not a very good actress, but she's fine. We gonna take it for what it is. Miss Hannah Gross, though, Miss Tania Miller, she can act her ass off. For what they did to her, I'm going to give it 4 pan dulces, you know, 4 lit candles, as she, as the whole entire show did. It was 4 lit candles, and that's what I'm going to give it. So it was all right. What about you?
Hill House, because of its inability to draw you in, I feel like I had to give it a cafecito just for that. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, had they focused a little more on Theo, then maybe I would have been a little happy. No, just kidding. But I thought it was a very good series in general. Like, I was really impressed with it. It's not something I would normally cover on here, but Bly Manor really pushed us into this.
It did.
So for that, I give like probably 1 cafecito, maybe a half, just because some of the acting was just, you know what I mean? It was really stiff
and stuff like that.
But like, it still makes it into this show because like, it was just so, like, touching, and I don't know how else to say it. It's just like, you know what I mean? Like, it really reaches you.
Yeah, it's part of a new wave of horror, like you said, and it's worth mentioning because it's so different now, and it's changing, and we're right here with the change, so it's pretty cool. I like what horror is doing now, but I just, you know, stop centering white people, or, you know, I don't know. But it was good.
Yeah. There's a new like horror. I think it's a film, maybe it's a show. I don't know, but it's called Bat Hair and it's on Hulu. I haven't seen it yet, but it's like all like I think it's mostly black women.
Yeah, I've seen it. You know, I'm not black. I don't want to give my opinion on it. I just wanted it to be maybe better, and it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. It's worth watching. You have to watch. But you're going to see the same things I'm going to see, and it's
interesting.
It's like a satire. It's about, bad hair. Justin Simeon, you know, he did Dear White People. It's worth watching to see Kelly Rowland.
The vibes.
Yes, it is that vibe. Kelly Rowland's in it, It's worth watching her be beautiful. So, there's a lot of funny things in there, but it ultimately wasn't as good as maybe Bronx was the Bronx versus Vampires. I would put that above it. So, yeah.
That's all I gotta know.
Yep.
All right, sweet. Well, I'm still glad that we covered this. I hope all the gays stuck around to the gay end. And it's worth it. Like Bly Manor, watch it if you want to cry. Hill House, watch it if you want like some horror and trauma,
just casually. I mean, Bly Manor is like very confusing up until like you get that flashback episode and then you're like, oh. But it's quite confusing with dashes of cuteness. And you're just like, wait a minute, I don't know what's going on. But you watch it because lesbians. Yep. Lord.
All right, guys. Well, next week is our episode is going to be on Patreon. And apparently we're going to be streaming live from the election. And and then the week after that, I don't know yet. We're going to still figure that out.
Yes.
But we'll see you guys on the other side.
Ooh, please. Oh, let's man. Look, we gonna make it, y'all. We have
go
to
go vote if you haven't voted already and you're one of these cool ass states like California where you can register even day of. Go do it. Do your part.
Look, in Texas, y'all can vote until the very last day of October. Please go vote anywhere in the state of Texas. Just take your driver's license because you remember voter suppression. Take your driver's license or your voter registration because voter suppression. Okay, y'all, be safe. Please don't go outside like that. I don't know. Just mind y'all's business and stay at home. Please.
Wear your mask. All right. Bye, guys.
Please.